The Truth About College Admission podcast, as well as our book and workbook, are brought to you by Johns Hopkins Press. Visit press.jhu.edu to learn more about their wide selection of books and journals from the world's most trusted authors, experts, and sources. I am one of your hosts, Brennan Barnard. I'm the Director of College Counseling and External Affairs for the Khan Schools Network and the College Admission Program Advisor for the Making Caring Common Project.
And I am Rick Clark. I'm the Executive Director for Strategic Student Access at Georgia Tech.
Well, this episode, we had Michael Horn on to speak with us. And Michael is just pretty much in every space you can imagine when it comes to college and education. You know, he speaks and writes about the future of education and works with a portfolio of education organizations to improve the life of each and every student. He's the author of Choosing College, which strips away the noise around college to help students and parents understand why they're going to school, how to make better choices. He also aids schools in designing better experiences. He's the co-founder and a distinguished fellow at the Clayton Christensen Institute for Disruptive Innovation, which is a nonprofit think tank. And he also teaches at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. And so on top of all that, he co-hosts the one of the top education podcasts, Future U and Class Disrupted. He's a regular contributor to Forbes.com and writes the Substack newsletter, The Future of Education. I mean, he serves as executive editor at Education Next, and his work has been featured in outlets like The New York Times and The Washington Post and The Atlantic and Harvard Business Review and NBC. And like I said, he's the author of several books, Choosing College. His most recent book was From Reopen to Reinvent, Recreating School for Every Child. And as he mentions in this episode, he has a book coming out next November, which is Job Moves, 9 Steps for Making Progress in Your Career.
Well, you know, it took us 2 seasons, but I think we have finally found somebody who wears more hats than you, Brennan.
I had a feeling you were going to go there. Well, in fact, what I didn't mention is he and I both host programs for the College Guidance Network for CGN. So yeah. That's another thing he does.
And while we don't do video necessarily with this podcast, I would say that he looks pretty healthy. So amazing. I mean,
and he's got young kids.
Yeah, impressive. You know, thinking about this episode and what to listen for, probably because he is in so many spaces, like you said, talking with so many people, and frankly, I think listening to so many people, which I do think is one of his strengths. He has some great questions for people to be asking themselves about what really matters, but then also to be asking colleges about what's important to them and how those two things fit. I really did appreciate the way he framed some of that and articulated that. It was different than some of the folks that we've heard in the past, and I think absolutely worth paying attention to and just borrowing when you go out on tours and are speaking with admission reps in the years ahead.
Absolutely. And I also really liked what he was saying about kind of being careful not to index on certain schools or careers and things like that, but really defining, you know, purpose and progress for yourself. You and I talk about that a lot, but I really like the way he kind of framed that out. So I hope folks will listen for that.
Well, enjoy this episode with Michael Horn.
Welcome, Michael Horn.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate the honor to be with you both.
Absolutely. Thanks. Yeah. So we start all our podcasts with just kind of getting to know our guests, of course, and would love to hear a little bit about your personal admission journey. You know, where did you decide to go and why, and any broad takeaways or tips you'd offer families?
Yeah, it's interesting when I tell the story because you realize how idiosyncratic some of these choices are. I ended up going to Yale University. And just to give you the backstory, my father was an alum, so I'm a legacy. And that actually made me really not want to go to Yale. I thought it was a waste of time visiting. My mom did not want me to go to Yale. I grew up in the DC area, and as this is the 90s, Christian Prince had been killed on the New Haven campus. So it was a big overhang of the safety or lack thereof in New Haven. And they said, you know, we're visiting your grandparents up in New York. We might as well drive by. And I said, absolutely not. This is a waste of time. We're driving up the Merritt Parkway. A bird crashes into our windshield and gets stuck in the windshield wiper, like flapping. And I'm like, this is an omen. Y'all are nuts, right? And we go anyway, and it's dead of June, and we get the great tour guide, and the energy on the campus is palpable. And as my mom tells it, you know, she looked at me, she's like, oh no, he's falling in love with this place. But I think in that way, you know, I went on a lot of college visits. I didn't do any of the stayovers. And then I had to convince myself, would it have the programs that I wanted? I was a big musician at the time. And I wanted to know, do they have a jazz program that would sort of hit up to this, to what I wanted? I say that only because I got there. I didn't make the jazz band my freshman year, and I never tried out again, because your life takes twists and turns in college in ways that are completely unexpected and almost over-indexing on something. I think in retrospect, and maybe this is the lesson, it doesn't make sense in my mind. And it's more about eliminating the things that really don't jive with you, like a frat heavy or, you know, big Greek life would not have been a good place for me and my personality. So knowing that ahead of time and taking those off the list, I think really important, right? And it's more about, as an 18-year-old, taking things off rather than saying like, this is the thing, because there are a lot of great colleges out there that'll fit your personality, or you'll mold to it, and you're still molding, right? That's a big part of college experience is, and we know this from the research, you know, certainly like getting to reinvent yourself is like a big piece of the college experience.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say, you know, we talk a lot about all the choices and options that students have, and just the fact that the higher ed spectrum in America, this one small country of ours, is vast. And, you know, sometimes I think students put pressure on themselves to find a school, but reversing it the way you're talking about, there's a lot of value in that too, eliminating and starting to wean down. And I think sometimes you can sort of come at it from both directions to figure out, you know, what place might quote unquote fit or match or just be worth looking at versus absolutely not work. You know, all of that's about self-discovery, right?
I think that's exactly right. And you can imagine a process where you check out a few campuses, you know, virtually, in person, whatever you're able to do. And you start realizing, hey, consistently, I don't like a large campus. Okay, that just told me something. The state flagships maybe are not the right fit for me, right? Or gee, I consistently love a campus feel in an urban environment. Okay, that's an important signal to start including more of those in the list. And sort of your list is not based on the US News and World Report list or some right external thing, but more what jives or doesn't with you, and really understanding, and these can be gut feels, right? I don't think it has to be incredibly scientific, except to say, gosh, that consistently doesn't feel right. Trust your gut on that. You know yourself pretty well, I think, at an internal level. Your gut connects to your brain after all. You might as well hide that signal and read something into it. And to your point, Rick, like, it takes pressure off to make the decision or the choice as though there's only one right choice. That's just, in my experience, clearly not the case.
Yeah.
Or gosh, a giant bird just hit our windshield.
Exactly.
Listen to that signal.
Yeah, don't over-index on the bizarre Edgar Allan Poe sort of college visit.
Absolutely. Well, you know, in the intro, we talked a little bit about, you know, some of the things you've done since college, and that is also a vast array of really interesting endeavors in the educational space, including, you know, authoring a few books. I know you're working on one now. The Future You podcast, which we've plugged before and had Jeff Salingo on, in addition to a variety of other things. So I'm just kind of curious about right now, either what are you working on that you want people to know about, or what are you just sort of excited or discovering or learning that you feel like would be applicable for people to hear?
Yeah, well, so the book that I'm working on right now is called Job Moves. It'll be out in November of 24. Just after the election, if people want to make a job move at that time, or, you know, someone running for president maybe doesn't get elected and they need a different job move. But the essentially it's to help people make switches in their careers and make progress as they're doing so. It's very similar in some ways to Choosing College, the book about how to choose college better. But I feel like we've developed a much more sound design process to help people navigate this. We've tested this with literally hundreds of people now and used in data from thousands of people who switched jobs to come up with the recommendations and design process in the book. And I just feel like I love Choosing College, but I feel like I've learned so much more about how to help people make choices that's consistent with the things that drive their energy and the things that are the skill sets or strengths or interests that they really want to develop and lean into. What are your assets? So tremendously excited about that. I think it plays into a lot of parent concerns around college these days, because obviously a lot of, I know kids say that they want a job out of college, but I think that's a lot of the parents driving that conversation. And so I think this is a way to help think about that, right? Both in their own lives, but also for their kids, and see this again as more of a process rather than a destination, which is, I think, something in the college world we often, as parents, sort of misfire on. But also, frankly, in our careers, you see, you know, a bunch of students, they go to college just to get into the best college for its own sake. And then they're like, okay, I got to get the internship at the consulting firm. I got to get the thing at the iBanking firm. And like, there's no intrinsic, you know, you don't even know what you do at a consulting firm, but you just sort of feel like it's the next race to be won, as opposed to how do I help you make progress as you define it?
Right. It's this fear of uncertainty and kind of lack of willingness to lean into the uncertainty. Of course, if you really had your marketing hat on, you'd be writing the country moves at that time. there's some people who'll be looking to change jobs, but some other people will be looking to change countries potentially.
Hopefully we have an answer for that as well. I mean, a big piece of it is also, and this is true for college as well, is how do you create little prototypes that allow you to feel like what that experience is going to feel like without taking that big step forward. That's true whether you're figuring out where to live, to your point, Brennan, or you know, the next job that you might have, or frankly college and living there on a day-to-day basis. And one of the big things we talk about is focus less on what you'll be and more on what you'll do on a day-to-day basis. So really think about the sets of experiences. And I think in college, this is easy as well, right? It's easy to say, you know, in my case, right? Like I'm a Yale alum or I'm a Yale student, right? And like that has a ring to it. It's the wrong place to focus. Like what's your day-to-day experiences going to be? And then the second piece of that is we really focus people to, or push people to not focus so much on the features of a place. Oh, it's got this many, you know, I'm going to try to do it in college terms, you know, dining halls and food choices and parties and this, but more like grounded in context of you living day to day. What's that actually going to be like for you? As opposed to, you know, the analogous would be you're searching homes, maybe in different countries, and you're like granite countertops, open windows, blah, blah, blah. But how are you going to actually live in that place? Right. If you're a dad with young kids, having a place like I'm in right now where I can retreat from the kids and record a podcast, that's super important. And so really living into those experiences and what you'll do, as opposed to the, oh, I'm going to be this. Oh, it sounds good. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, one of the ways for high school students to test out, like you're saying, is dual enrollment. And you have kind of leaned into this issue in a significant ways. And I know you recently interviewed John Fink from the Community College Research Center about dual enrollment and how extremely broad that definition is of that term. And, you know, I think what we see is, you know, often families are asking, you know, should my student take an AP course or a dual enrollment course? And are all dual enrollment courses created equal? Can you tell us just a bit about that conversation and how it translates to, you know, advice for students and families?
Yeah. So just to put color on what you just said, right? There's like 26 different versions or something like that of dual enrollment. There's dual enrollment where your high school teacher is teaching it. You can be taking it, you know, go to the community college. You can be taking it at a four-year college. You can be taking it online there's a lot of different flavors and arrangements, who the students are with you, et cetera, et cetera. I think my takeaway from the research was this. If you're taking courses that will qualify for general education credit, it's a really good use of time. It's going to tend to transfer well. It's a clear place it can count, right, in the sequence of a course taking in college. It's something that makes sense to community colleges and four-year colleges alike. And it's something that can, if saving credits, right, is important to you to try to get cost or time down, it's something that can actually translate and transfer. If you're starting to take courses that sound really cool, but like don't have a clear place in that sequence, frankly, the benefits seem to recede quite a bit in terms of helping you move quicker through the college experience or helping you transfer credits. We know that 43% of community college credits don't transfer when you move to a four-year institution. And that's often because they don't fit in the boxes, right? And so the more you can make it fit into the college boxes, the better. I will say the other one that jumped out as an interesting area from the research, I think, was things in career technical education, because they can get applied to your career, not necessarily college, but actually getting you into the job market quicker if that's what's really resonating with you. And so those are a couple of the tips I would give. The last one I would give is, I personally put a little bit more stock on a college course actually taught by a college faculty member. And I think particularly as you think about four-year colleges and how they'll view those credits, they're going to put a lot more stock because they're not going to have a question, gee, did the rigor stay the same when it moved into a high school context with a high school teacher? There's no external validation like with AP, right, or IB. And so it just leaves room for more doubts to creep in. If I'm taking, you know, Arizona State University, great online programs, right? You can take the actual online courses from real Arizona State professors, be experiencing them with other college students. Other research institutions, other community colleges, other regional publics, they're not going to question, did you have a rigorous experience in that? And so that's the other filter I would apply here.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, here in Georgia, we highly incentivize dual enrollment because it's funded by our lottery. And so it is free for students to take, you know, college courses. And that sounds great. And it is good. But, you know, when talking to students around the state in particular, and the question is, should I take dual enrollment or AP or IB or something else? I mean, I think the question back to them is always like, what is the goal? What are you trying to accomplish? Right. Because that's going to dictate the courses that you take, the whole motivation around that. I mean, if it's to get course credit and go to Georgia Tech, that whole conversation and route is going to be very different than, well, I want it to look good. You know, what's going to look best in the admission process? Or is that really going to apply for credit in a particular degree field? And man, there's some terrible, unfortunately, either lack of counseling or just like misguided counseling around this. One of the biggest we see is on the math track, where college algebra, right? That sounds like a good course. And it's not to say it's a bad one. But if you're like an aspiring STEM student and you've already got Algebra 2, that is not the right next step, right? But that is extremely common here and I think around the country as well.
I think you're exactly right. And just, you know, double click on it. The question you asked again is, what's the purpose, right? And so that puts the why at the center. I think that's the commonality in all the, you know, everything we've talked about so far is understand your why or understand what it's not about, right? Yeah. And then align around that. And I agree. I think a lot of the financial incentives have me worried because it becomes just easy to take a course that doesn't exactly advance your purpose. And as you know, a calculus course or even a data science, you know, course at that point would serve a student far more than taking college algebra, which from a content perspective is going to be really redundant with what you've already done. Yeah. And just the fact that it's quote unquote college. Colleges are going to see past that and they're going to be able to understand, is this helpful or not?
Right. No question. Sticking a little bit here on the theme of prior podcasts that you guys have had recently on Future You, and we'll put links in the show notes. But I really enjoyed the recent conversation with Greg Lukianoff from FIRE, which is Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. And, you know, right now, of course, certainly working on a college campus, but I think anybody who's listening to this podcast and has their radar up about what's happening in college admission or colleges is thinking about issues around academic freedom, issues around protests, encampments, you know, police presence, all of the very high profile controversy that's occurring in the, I think, important but fiery debate around how this should look going forward. Trying to distill that down from headlines and, you know, clicks and stuff on social media to what does this mean for families? You know, I just wonder from your conversation, like, all right, as I'm going out this summer, I'm a junior, and I'm going out this summer with my family looking at colleges, you know, what are good questions to be asking? What should we be looking for? What should we be concerned about as it relates to all this? What's your take there?
Yeah, so I love the question. It's interesting because I also just gave a talk to a conference of independent school folks at Dartmouth around anti-Semitism and Islamophobia, and how they might think about, is it changing individuals' college-going patterns? And just to stay on that for one beat, my take is that it's not causing, you know, a Jew to choose a certain school, but it is taking certain schools off the list, right? In a place that they wouldn't feel comfortable, for example.
Yeah.
So the questions that I'd be asking are, is this a place that's really leaning in and working on trying to introduce civility and dialogue in the campus environment? And so, you know, you look at a place like at Dartmouth, that even a year before the October 7th attacks, they were facilitating conversations where people with very different views about every, you know, the long history in the Middle East, long, complicated, sordid history of the Middle East, were exchanging those viewpoints and realizing that you can disagree without being disagreeable. And that to me is the biggest thing you want to be looking at as you're thinking about these places. Because I think, you know, we have a mental health crisis, right, in our teens across the country right now. John Haidt obviously has done a great job writing about this. One of my takeaways from that is we haven't done enough to build resilience in young people. And when things get hard, that you have a way to rise above it. And I guarantee you something about college, every single individual is going to have hard moments and hard times. I certainly did. I had moments where I cried and wondered why I was where I was. And if you don't have something deeper you can go to help lift yourself out of that, you're going to struggle. And I think part of building resilience is also to realize, hey, Brennan and I were arguing about X the other day on, you know, a Slack channel. And then the next day, like, we can still be friends though, right? And like, it actually made us richer and learned from it. And so I think campuses that are making an active commitment to that, that's one. The second thing is, I do think I would be looking at, you know, are there lots of cancellations of speakers with divergent viewpoints? And what does that mean as a signal of is that campus really living into those values or not? So I think that's something that campuses, or excuse me, students should really be looking at when they're visiting campuses, not just to say, is there lip service to an ideal, but you actually have evidence that you live into it or that you're at least working on it, right? I think those are the two big things. Obviously, different groups, you know, if you're a Jewish student, you're going to want to know, is there a thriving Hillel in a place maybe you can be comfortable? If you're Muslim, you're going to want to make sure that there's halal food, right, in the dining halls and things of that nature. Those are obviously important features, but I think underlying principle around discussion and debate in furtherance of our education is a really important one.
Yeah, those are great questions to ask for sure.
Yeah. And I mean, in addition to that, I mean, obviously there's lots of talk about college costs and athletic conference upheaval. And I mean, you name it. You look at the headlines and kind of people are wondering what's happening to college right now. Is it worth it? You know, are we in your research and you're talking with so many people, are we at a huge inflection point or, you know, it's just kind of a passing vortex of issues. And, you know, when you talk to your neighbors and your friends and your family, what do you tell them about kind of the immediate future of college?
Yeah, well, let me say, I think we're at a different point because obviously this is a conversation I've been personally having for 10, 12 years. Mm-hmm. But I live in Lexington, Massachusetts, which is a town, as you all know, and for those that don't, people are expected to go to four-year colleges here. There's definitely a vibe of overachievement, right, in this community. It's similar for those that know, like a Palo Alto, California, or Bethesda, Maryland, or something like that. People, my neighbors, they ask me the question now, should my kid go to college? That was not a question they asked a decade ago, right? And so I think there is something very different.
Right.
Now, the answer that I give, frankly, is not a headline one. It's a nuanced one. It depends. And what I want to know is, how does it fit with what your child really wants? Not about college for its own sake, but like, what really gets them excited in life? There are a lot more career technical education pathways than that are gaining a lot of steam that can make a great income that if they resonate with the way that they do work, you ought to look at, right? Because what we know is if you take out loans and you go to college and you don't complete, that's the worst of all worlds.
Mm-hmm.
So I think to me, it's having clarity around, you know, that conversation before, what doesn't work for you and what does, so you can make that right next step. And I think we're seeing that in the data. You know, a lot of students are choosing career technical education schools rather than a four-year college. That's an interesting trend. I know a lot of people think it's a bad one. I'm not so sure it is. Like, I think if we get more motivated students that know why they're there, that's a good thing. A second thing that I often say is, if you're really not sure, and a lot aren't, take a gap year. And by that, I don't mean backpack around Europe for 9 months. What I mean is make it a year of discovery. Go out and take a couple jobs. Go do some community work abroad. Go, you know, learn stuff about yourself, right? And figure out, because the students that do then go to a four-year college, the research tends to show that they have a lot more purpose behind that decision. They're much more likely to complete, and they tend to get higher grades because they sort of lived a little bit of life and they're ready to charge again, refresh. Yeah. So that's the second thing. I think the third thing I do tell them is, look, you know, particularly if you come from like a, you know, a lower income background and you get into a selective college, go. It, like Raj Chetty data, others, right? Super clear. Mm-hmm. That's a life-changing experience in terms of the people you will interact with, the social capital that you will accrue, the experiences you will be exposed to in the 4 years there, and the chances of graduating are really, really good. And by the way, these schools are going to make it affordable now if you're in that position. So I don't know if I'm giving you the quick headline, Brennan, but I to me, that's the way I think about it, is understand your situation, understand your kids' goals, and try to find the right answer for them, not sort of the average.
Yeah, well said.
No, I mean, the title of our book and also this podcast is The Truth About College Admission, right? And as we know with the truth, it's usually not in a Twitter-sized bite here. So we appreciate you digging in on that and giving nuance. You're right. It depends. And that's what this is about, is, you know, self-discovery, asking good questions. One thing we like to close with is, you know, and maybe you've already hit on this and just want to expound a bit or something possibly new, but just sort of that one message, you know, what is it you would really want people to hear from you? Counselors listen, parents, students, you know, what would be the thing that you would want people to know and hear from you?
Oh boy, I would say the more you can spend on understanding what progress means to you, and then finding choices that allow you to make that kind of progress, the better. Mm-hmm. And the way you define progress is different from the way I define progress. And frankly, the way I define progress at the moment is different from the way I defined it 15 years ago before I had kids.
Yeah.
And so this is a changing thing. It depends on context. Make the right choice for you, not what people think you should do, based on the brand name, based on, you know, the environment that people are sort of putting pressure on you. Make what's right and feels right to you based on the progress you want to make.
Love it. Love it. Well, Michael, thank you so much. Thanks for all you do in so many different spaces and for sharing your voice here with us today. And look forward to continue to follow your great work.
True honor to be with you guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Michael. Good luck finishing the book. We'll look for it to come out.
Thank you. Thank you.
Take care. We hope you enjoyed that episode with Michael Horn. So much good insight, perspective, and questions to ask, whether that be of yourself, of adults in your life, or certainly as you get out and are talking with folks on college campuses. We also would like to thank our season 2 partner, Grown and Flown. Have worked with them for a number of years, and they're an excellent resource for parents of high school students. They have a website full of expert content on college admission and really all aspects of raising teens. They have an affordable monthly membership called College Admission, Grown and Flown for families who have questions about admission and how to pay for college, which we have put a link in the show notes on. That's a 3-week free opportunity for you. Want to highly recommend that as just a place to find current and reliable advice from admission experts and live weekly sessions, but also the ability to go back and archive prior videos from experts around the country. Again, we appreciate your time today. Hope you enjoyed the episode, and we look forward to joining you again soon. Have a great week.